55. Phantom Gun Syndrome. "Miller," said Brown, from his enormous white leather recliner, across 10 feet of off-white shag carpet. "Your name is David Miller. Same birthday, same age, same place of birth." They were in a Gulfstream jet on a runway at Ronald Reagan. Milgram had his own white leather recliner. He hadn't been to this airport since it had been National, across a bridge from Georgetown. He knew this was a Gulfstream because there was an elaborately engraved brass plate that said Gulfstream 2 on the high-gloss wooden surround of the window beside his chair. Bird's eye maple, he thought, but too shiny, like the trim in a limo that was really trying. There was a lot of that in this cabin, and a lot of white leather, polished brass, and off-white shag. "David Miller," he repeated. "You live in New York. You're a translator. Russian."
"I'm Russian?"
"Your passport," said Brown, holding one up, navy blue with pale gold trim, "is American. David Miller. David Miller is not a junkie. David Miller, upon entering Canada, will neither be in possession of nor under the influence of drugs." He checked his watch. He was wearing the gray suit and a white shirt again. "How many of those pills are you holding?"
"One,"
said Milgram. It was too serious a matter to lie about. "Take it," said Brown. "I want you straight for customs."
"Canada?"
"Vancouver."
"Aren't there going to be more passengers?"
Milgram asked. The Gulfstream looked like it could sit 20 or so, or serve as the set for a porn feature, as most of the seating consisted of very long white leather divans, plus a bedroom in the back that looked like a natural for your more formal money shots. "No," said Brown, "there aren't." He slipped the passport back into his suit coat, then patted the place on his right hip where he kept his gun. Milgram had seen him do this 5 times since they'd left N Street, and the micro-expression that always accompanied it convinced him that Brown had left his gun behind, also his black nylon bag. Brown was suffering from phantom gun syndrome, Milgram thought, like an amputee itching to scratch toes that were no longer there. The Gulfstream's engines fired up, or started, or whatever you called it. Milgram looked around the back of his white leather chair to the front of the cabin, where a corrugated white leather curtain sealed off the cockpit. There was evidently a pilot up there, though Milgram had yet to see him. "When we land," said Brown, raising his voice against the engines, "customs officers drive out to the plane. They come aboard, say hello. I hand them the passports, they open them, hand them back, say goodbye. An aircraft like this, that's what happens. Our passport numbers and the pilots went through when he filed our flight plan. Don't behave as though you're expecting them to ask you any questions." The plane began to taxi. When it rushed forward, the roar of its engines deepening and seemed to leap almost straight up into the air, Milgram was completely unprepared. Nobody had even told them to fasten their seatbelts, let alone about oxygen masks or life jackets. That seemed not only wrong, but deeply, almost physically, anomalous. As did the steepness of this climb, forcing Milgram, who was facing backward, to cling desperately to the white, padded arms. He looked out the window and saw Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport recede more quickly than he would have thought possible, and as smoothly as if someone had zoomed a lens in reverse. When they leveled out, Brown removed his shoes, stood, and padded toward the back of the plane, where, Milgram assumed, there would be a toilet. From behind, he saw Brown's hand touch the place where his gun wasn't.